KVOE, live and local, 1400 AM, 96.9 FM, presents the On Air Chat. Now, here are your hosts, Steve Souter and Aaron Harder.
Good morning. Welcome to the On Air Chat. We are brought to you by CB Financial. Craig Barnwell feels the income is the outcome that matters most in retirement. Call 620-208-6777 for a free consultation. And Bruce Davis Construction for commercial dirt work, demolition, dirt hauling, and more. Call Bruce Davis Construction, 620-342-5001. Good day, Steve Souter.
Aaron, it is a good day. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. Not as good as the Lady Spartans.
Yeah, you knew that was should have been a mismatch. They were highly seeded, and they did their job. You know, though, it was the first action for either of the basketball teams since the passing of Allison Hess. She wasn't on the basketball team. I understand maybe she was a trainer or a manager.
She played summer ball with those girls this past summer, but did not play basketball this year.
Yeah, but she does play volleyball, or did play volleyball, and they didn't. They didn't let that stop them.
No, nope.
Maybe it helped them.
They came out, played really well, and they did. It was a really nice senior recognition after the game as well.
We got a big guy over here. We better get to.
Yes, we do. He's wearing Spartan colors.
Yeah, he does. He's got energy. How do you say it? Evergy.
Evergy. Yes, sir.
BJ Byer, general manager. Is your title general manager?
Plant manager.
Plant manager.
Yes, sir.
Wolf Creek.
Yes.
For those who don't know, located over, is it 40 miles from Emporia?
Yeah, roughly 40. It's a little east of, north and east of Burlington, Kansas. Straight east of Neustron, the metropolis of Neustron.
Been on Highway 75, you know where it is. It's the big bomb you see over there.
Yeah, it's hard to miss.
What's your commute now? It was about 40 miles.
It was about 40 miles when we lived here, and it's 78 miles one way.
Ooh, you doubled up.
Absolutely. But we did buy, we have a second residence in Burlington that's only 2 miles from the plant. So
you spend a lot of time there.
If opportunity presents itself, I stay there and don't drive. Or if the kids don't have anything back home, then
they can come down and hang out.
That's right.
Let's do a little bio on you, BJ. We'd like to start off with a bio. Tell us where you're from and how you got into the nuclear industry and how you got promoted to plant manager at Wolf Creek.
So born in western Kansas, southwest of Garden City in Sublette, and then my family moved to northwest Arkansas when I was really young. So went K through 12 in a town called Gentry, Arkansas, and then moved to Russellville, Arkansas to go to college at Arkansas Tech. And right after college, so I was mechanical engineering major and played football. After college, did a stint in Little Rock, between Little Rock and Pine Bluff, working for the Department of Transportation, and then had the opportunity to come back and work at the nuclear plant in Russellville. So it was never in my plans to get into nuclear power. It ended up being a teammate's father worked at the plant there and called and gave me the opportunity. So got into operations at that plant, grew up in operations, then spent about 4 years in maintenance before I had the opportunity to come to Kansas. And I came to Kansas, home to Kansas, because of the leadership team at Wolf Creek. And I had history working with them in Arkansas and at other utilities. It's a real close-knit industry, I would say. So then came to Wolf Creek and spent a year and a half in engineering before I transitioned to plant manager. So, you know, I think how I got promoted, one, I knew the leadership team. And then, two, having experience in all three of the major divisions at the plant, I think, helped.
Well, and Christy's job also kind of led to you coming to Kansas as well.
It did. It was a, you know, kind of live life in segments and do what works best for your family in total. And me getting the opportunity to – there aren't many nuclear plants, and we'd always looked at – Division II colleges close to nuclear plants. We had a map, and we've always talked about that throughout our marriage. And so getting the opportunity to come here, Wolf Creek is pretty unique, right? If you think there's about six Division II colleges very close, and that's our passion as well. That's her passion, is to be a director of athletics of a Division II institution. And she worked here at Emporia State for 4 years and then transitioned to Rockhurst University almost 2 years ago now.
When time flies.
It does.
And of course, we're talking about his, your wife, Christy Beyer. And as you just said, you went to school in Arkansas. You know, you got a great story because you can. People say, "Where'd you go to college?" You can say, "I'm a Wonder Boy."
That's right.
How did that nickname even come to be?
That's unique that you know that. But the Arkansas Tech Wonder Boys won a game. They were originally the Aggies, and then they went and beat a four-year school, the Teachers College, or the State Teachers College, and they traveled and beat them. In the 20s, I think it was the late teens or the 20s, and there was an article published about the Wonder Boys, and it referred to John Tucker, who was played football at Alabama and then went to the military for several years and then came back and played football at Arkansas Tech. And then after that, coached several years and became the athletic director. So John Tucker's the original Wonder Boy, and the nickname came from one game where they traveled and beat a four-year school when they were only a two-year school. But with like a 28-year-old playing at a two-year college, it's a little different than the rules and regulations now.
Let me tell you how I know they were the Wonder Boys. And if Mackenzie Sinelli, who was scheduled to be with you today, and unfortunately her schedule didn't allow for it, her dad is right in the middle of this story. Back in probably might even have been late 60s or 70s, I don't know, early 70s. Bud Elliott became the head coach at Emporia State, and their first game was against Arkansas Tech in Arkansas. And Arkansas Tech had a returning All-American, I won't say point guard, but nose tackle, and his name was Perry Goodell. I'll never forget it. And he was really good. And Bud Elliott told the Hornet Club, he said, after the game, we didn't know about it until after the game, but we beat the Wonder Boys, and they were good. They were preseason. I don't know about preseason rank because I don't think they did that back in those days. And he said, I had a little freshman guard that just bit Perry Goodell on the ankle all night long. He couldn't. He took him down. He crab blocked him. He blah, blah, blah. And that was Bill Sinelli.
Oh,
Mackenzie's dad.
Oh, well, so that makes me think of a lot of things. But one of the things I miss the most about Emporia is watching ESU games in the suite with Coach Sinelli. And I've shared this with Mackenzie. There's a lot of people I don't want to watch football games with. I would rather turn the volume down on the TV and just watch it. But watching games with Coach Sinelli was very therapeutic for me to listen to him talk and see the things that he was seeing. It was just a really good time for me.
Nobody knows better than an offensive lineman.
Yeah. And it doesn't surprise me he was a biter. He's got a little fight in him.
Yeah.
He was undersized.
A little undersized.
Yeah.
He ended up playing tackle, and I don't think he's probably ever weighed more than 230, 240.
Yeah, the evolution of the student-athlete over the last 50 years is incredible. When you think about, you know, I would have been a large offensive lineman, and now, you know, at 220 pounds, which is what I played at, 220, 230.
Yeah, good luck playing safety.
Yeah, that's right.
Absolutely. With that all said, of course, now you're the plant manager, at Wolf Creek. And in some of the notes that Mackenzie provided us, the one that kind of stood out to me that I think will shock some of our listeners, Wolf Creek opened in 1985. And we didn't own these radio stations in 1985. We didn't do that till 86. So that gives you an idea how long Wolf Creek's been out there. Is that unusual? What is the lifespan? What's the history of lifespan of nuclear plants?
Each plant is individually licensed, so each facility is licensed. Each reactor is licensed by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and all of them were initially licensed for 40 years. Almost all of them have filed for and been approved for a license extension of 20 years, which we have done that as well. So we're licensed to 2045. There are a few utilities that have went on and filed for the second license extension, so to operate them from 60 years of life to 80 years of life. And really what that entails is a lot more tests and inspections that we have to go do before you enter that period of extended operations. And so we're on track to complete that with margin before we hit that period of extended operations in 2045.
So we don't have to worry about, I mean, because in Emporia, do we get Wolf Creek power?
Yeah, we get the power, so we don't distribute it. We sell our electricity to the Southwest Power Pool, and they determine where it goes, what goes where. But we provide, our power goes to roughly 90 counties in the state of Kansas, and then also into eastern, or east into Missouri. But what I would say is, we've made a lot of investments, capital investments in plant reliability to set us up to run the plant reliably well into that 2045 time.
So I don't have to worry about it going away in my lifetime.
You do not. And, you know, our whole industry, we say we're kind of hostages of each other because we help each other. We really work together as an industry to protect the health and safety of the public. We generate electricity. We know that. We do that safely and reliably. But it is also our obligation, our responsibility to do that with public health and safety first and foremost. So we do everything we can to protect you all from the large amounts of energy that we do potentially have. And so when we say we're hostages of each other, you know, if we had a Fukushima type event like we had in Japan in 2011, things could change that dynamic. But we do a lot in this country, and our designs are a lot different in this country to prevent something like that from happening.
Yeah, we, Aaron and I, have some knowledge of what happens if you guys have anything out of kilter, because people show up and you bring people in to deal with it, and with the hotel, we see that.
Yeah, you know, we've done a lot. The whole industry has done a lot to become more efficient and operate more economically. And so in that, we've reduced our number of on-site resources about 300 people in the last 8 years or so. So we rely heavily on external vendors to provide those services. And these are highly skilled people that do certain things at every plant, and they do it all the time. So, you know, they're better at it, frankly, than we are, and we rely on them heavily. The refueling outage that we had in the fall is a great example of that. You know, the group that did all of our turbine work, all of our reactor services work, we work with them and provide oversight of them, and we're obviously responsible for them. But we couldn't execute our outages. The amount of scope that we put into that window, we could not do that without the help of these people that come in. And then the side benefit for the area is, typically people that have good paying jobs, and they don't want to cook for themselves, so they also boost the local economies, from what I see.
You use the term outage. We know what that means, but maybe some of the listeners don't. And give us a schedule or how often that happens and maybe some of the numbers.
Sure. We have enough fuel in the reactor to operate 18 months, and so every 18 months, roughly, we have a scheduled refueling outage. We'll shut the plant down, take it offline, which means open the output breakers, cool it down, depressurize it, so you take all the energy out of the primary system, and then we take the reactor vessel apart. Aaron has seen it in that state, and, you know, Aaron and Jamie and the guys came out a few years ago. We remove half the fuel and put half new assemblies in, and then basically reverse that process. When we go to those modes of operations, then it gives us a lot more opportunity to do maintenance on other safety-related equipment. So we're required by law to have certain equipment, and we have multiple trains for redundancy. So we don't have the opportunity to work on that equipment when we're online and the reactor's critical, because it's required to be available, right, to support safe shutdown of the plant if needed. So it gives us an opportunity to do that. And when I talked about improving plant reliability, this last outage, you know, we replaced 5 large transformers and a lot of pumps and motors we refurbished. That's when we do it, is in that shutdown window.
And there's 2 different shutdowns. Is that right? One of them's a little longer than the other, or are all outages the same length?
they are not the same length, and it depends on the scope, right? It depends. There are certain plants that in our industry where probably their demand is a little different than ours and their market condition is different than ours. So they're trying to shut down they try to execute short outages. So they're
down the least amount of time as possible.
That's right. There are plants that do outages in less than 20 days. That's really not in our business model. You know, we're fortunate that we have a very diverse generation portfolio. We have a lot of wind, right? And whether we generate the wind or somebody else does, getting the wind from western Kansas to where the demand is east of us is causes some grid congestion, right? But it also drives the Southwest Power Pool's market conditions a little bit differently. So I say all that to say short outages really aren't in our business model.
They're not what?
In our business model.
Oh.
Right. So we typically will be around 40 days for a refueling outage.
And all dependent on what you find in the previous 18 months where you're up and running and what needs replaced. I assume when you replace five big transmissions, it probably takes a little bit longer.
Yeah. And, you know, our people do incredible things. And so all those improvement, reliability improvement initiatives that we did, every one of them worked. And when we talk about replacing a control power transformer or a large power transformer, you're talking about thousands of connections and terminations that, you know, actuate different plant components and relays for protection circuitry. And, you know, we have... It's planned with precision over the previous 3 years. So those outage milestones, it takes 3 years to plan the outage, and we do that. And especially on the significant work or the critical work, there are a lot of people and a lot of sets of eyes that go into that planning. So it's executed well.
Let me ask. I did my research, which is kind of like college. I Googled nuclear power plants, and I looked for the questions.
Okay.
And one of them I came up with, and I promise you I'm way above my pay grade asking this.
I told you not to ask me a hard one, right?
Well, I think this is one you've probably been asked a lot of times. But what about uranium? Because I understand uranium is required to do what you do, and it is not a renewable element, or what do you call it, a renewable resource? Is that accurate?
It is. And so I'll just tell you there's several steps in that process to mine the uranium ore and then get it into the uranium-238, which is what we use. We are in a pretty good spot with our fuel portfolio is fairly diverse. And, you know, our owners have invested well into the future. We're into the 2035 time frame-ish on enough uranium ore itself. And so we own it, but it's stored at different facilities in the United States. And so
it's already been mined?
Yes. Yep. And so there's different steps in that process, right? You mine it, and then you have to go through the fuel fabrication and then get it into the assemblies, which are what gets delivered to us once it comes on site. And it won't come on site for us until a month or so before the refueling outage. So that's a pretty... It's a very detailed and regimented process, as you might imagine, and we have a group of people that keep track of it, and they provide us reports just so we have oversight of it. But that dynamic has changed. You're right on that, but it's pretty low. We view it as pretty low risk for us.
As is getting rid of it once the fuel is spent. You guys put a big dollar amount into a new spent fuel storage facility out
there. Nuclear waste.
That's right. It's our dry fuel storage facility, which before 2022, every fuel assembly that we had ever went through or spent and removed from the core was on site in our spent fuel pool. So once it comes out of the reactor, it goes into a spent fuel pool. It stays there until this last year we implemented our first ever dry fuel storage campaign. And so we move it on almost a rail car type system out to a dry cast storage location, which is there on site inside of our protected area boundary.
So it doesn't leave the area?
It will not.
Of course, that kind of stuff is in the news with the train wrecks and the stuff at, East Palestine. Is that what it is?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, right now, we had one of the commissioners of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission on site yesterday, so this is pretty late breaking, but there's no intent or plans right now to make any changes. So our intent and our plan is to continue to store it on site.
You go there to work every day, so you're pretty comfortable with it.
Absolutely.
Okay, let's get a break in.
Let's take our caller and then go to break.
Oh, we have a caller. Yep. I'm sorry. I should be paying attention.
Good morning. Welcome to the on-air chat.
Good morning. Quick question. What was the original useful life of Wolf Creek, and how old is it now? Is it indeed one of the oldest, if not the oldest, plant going? And is the National Repository for Nuclear Waste still open and finished and not used? That's it. Thank you.
Did you get all that, BJ? In 85.
So original plant life was 40 years, opened in 85, so we're rolling on to 38 years. We are approved to go to 60 years, which is in 2045, and we're on track to do that. As far as the facility, I think you're referring to Yucca Mountain, and there are more things required before we would ever send our fuel there, and it really is with the Department of Energy. And the Nuclear Regulatory Commission has some role in that. But as the commissioner told us yesterday, it's really in the area of the Department of Energy. So right now we'll keep it on site until further progress.
What about the age of the plant? Is this one of the older ones?
Oh, no, not at all. So we're actually considered one of the newer ones. 85 is, benefit of that is it was post Three Mile Island, and we learned a lot as an industry, so different modifications, different designs that we had in, and our training programs were reflected the learnings from that event as well. So the plants in Florida and on the East Coast are several of them are well into their period of extended operation.
All right. BJ Beyer, plant manager, Wolf Creek's our guest. Says the on-air chat, CB Financial and Bruce Davis Construction make it possible. You're listening to KVOE. We're live and we are local.
Hi, Craig Barnwell with CB Financial. I've been in retirement and wealth planning for over 25 years. I can help you get the most sustainable income out of your Social Security, your 401ks, your IRAs, and your brokerage account. When you know what's coming in this month, next month, and every month, you'll be able to enjoy retirement to the fullest. Give me a call to set up a free, no-obligation visit. Retire happy, retire with CB Financial. You can reach us at 620-208-6777.
Construction jobs don't go away when the weather gets colder. Bruce Davis Construction is available all winter long. When you need commercial dirt work, from demolition to prepare for a building site or parking lot to dirt work and hauling, Bruce Davis will give you a quality job. Bruce Davis Construction, proud to be involved in recent construction jobs, including the addition at Emporia High School, Emporia Travel Plaza, Glendale, and the David Trailer Zoo. Call Bruce Davis Construction at 620-342-5001.
Listen to Hornet Basketball, home and away, on Mix 104.9, the mobile app, and at KVOE.com.
KVOE, 1400 AM, 96.9 FM, and time now for a look at headlines from the 24-hour KVOE newsroom, and a look at all the latest local headlines. Here is Chuck Samples.
Thanks, Sean. Good morning, everybody. A familiar face will be the new superintendent at USD 386 Madison Virgil. It's Tammy Baird, currently serving the district as junior senior high principal. She will begin as superintendent effective July 1st after interviews yesterday, one involving Baird, another involving Humboldt High School principal John Johnson. More information at KVOE.com. Services have been announced for Allison Hess, the Emporia High School sophomore who passed away last week. Visitation will be at 6:30 Sunday evening at 12th Avenue Baptist Church. Celebration of life will be 6:30 Monday evening at White Auditorium. And Hartford residents were set to choose three city council members as part of the 2023 election cycle, which, believe it or not, is underway. And position four has come open with Ashley Meyer resigning from the board. KVOE forecast on the TV 13 weather team. Sunny and breezy. High fire danger today with a high of 61. Partly cloudy tonight. 32. Wet tomorrow afternoon with a high of 45. Possibility of a rain snow mix for Thursday night, early Friday. But any travel issues should melt away Friday afternoon with a high of 48. From the 24-hour KVOE Newsroom, I'm Chuck Samples.
Thank you, Chuck. Currently a light northwest breeze, sunny skies, 50 degrees at KVOE, 1400 AM, 96.9 FM. All the information you need, live and local.
All right, welcome back. Steve and Aaron, and our guest is BJ Beyer, plant manager of Wolf Creek. Opened in 1985, and we've been talking a lot of Wolf Creek, and you told us a little bio, and you told us what your wife's doing, but you didn't tell us about your 18-year-old daughter and your freshman-to-be son, Brooks and Sloan.
Yeah, well, thanks for taking me back to that. I don't know where to start. So Sloan turned 8 on over this last week, and I think she's still celebrating that birthday, but she does act like she's much older than 8 years old, and definitely thinks she can have more responsibility than an 8 year old. So she's doing a lot. She's playing soccer, which she loves, playing basketball. She's working on some tennis on the side. So not quite pickleball harder, but you know,
we'll get her there.
She enjoys tennis, and then her favorite, probably close second to soccer, is swimming of all things. So, and then Brooks is 13, going on 14 in a couple months. So he's working on his driver's, trying to get his driver's permit.
Third time a charm for Marley.
Oh, yeah, I keep telling him he's going to have to study. And I think Christy thinks we just give somebody money and he's going to be on the road, which is a little scary. But, you know, Brooks looks bigger or looks older than 13 because he's, I think he's 5'10 and about 190 pounds. So he's excited about Spring Hill High School football. That's the district that we're in now. And pretty good program over there, and the school system has been good. So we were real, I think Steve and I talked a little bit about this beforehand. You know, my biggest reservation of moving again after we just moved here was the kids, you know, and fearful of how they're going to fit in. That age that Brooks is at is especially a tough one through the developmental years. And you know, frankly, kids just aren't always nice to each other, and we all have things that can be picked on or made fun of. So I was concerned about that, but what I've learned is they're more resilient than we are. You know, they've adjusted just fine. They fit in fine, and the people over there have been great, so it's been good.
I know Brooks is going to play football. Probably couldn't stay at home if he didn't. What about other sports do you think he's going to try to participate in?
Yeah, Jamie will love this, your son Jamie. So he started wrestling when we went to Spring Hill, but you can't wrestle and play basketball. And so Brooks is that biggest kid on his team that loves to shoot fadeaway three-pointers, right? The NBA is running these kids, I tell you. But Jamie gives me a lot of feedback that he needs to put the basketball down. But he really enjoys basketball. He did learn a lot in wrestling, and I thought wrestling was very good for him because it takes a lot of courage just to put that uniform on, and it's very humbling. And there's really only one person to look at when you don't succeed, and it's the person in the mirror, right? So I thought his coaches over there did really good with him, and I thought he built a lot of character for him. Really one of the first times he wasn't good at something he tried to do, right? And so he learned a lot. And then he's also doing track and field. And, of course, mom's favorite sport for him is baseball. So I don't know if you know, Christy's dad was a college baseball player. And so there's a lot of passion from that side on making him into a baseball player. So I don't know which
one
he
likes the most. No lack of sports for Brooks.
No, there are very few days that he's not doing two sports in a day.
And I assume you're happy with the school districts as well.
We are. You know, a lot of information flow, a lot of communication from that school district.
City manager's questionable, but.
Who's the city manager?
Lane Massey.
Oh. Just took over. Well, good for him. I'm glad they left Caden here to play golf.
Correct.
So that's great. Let's get back to nuclear stuff, Aaron.
Yeah, talk a little bit about the ownership of Wolf Creek. It's obviously gone through different owners, but talk about the current ownership structure, and then let's get into Wolf Creek's actual contribution to the power grid.
Okay. Yeah, so prior to, I'll just go back to 2018, we had three owners. We had what was Kansas City Power and Light, Westar Energy, and KEPCO. And so in 2018, when Kansas City Power and Light and Westar Energy merged, then we ended up having two owners, Evergy and KEPCO. And Evergy, being a 94% owner, it made sense for us to become Evergy employees. So in January of 2020, all Wolf Creek employees became Evergy employees. We are still owned 6% by KEPCO. So on our board of directors and a lot of our oversight functions are fulfilled by both our corporate leaders at Evergy and executive corporate leaders at KEPCO. So sometimes people may overlook that or forget about that since we're all Evergy employees, but we still have a close relationship with them as an owner. And, you know, 6% of an asset as big as Wolf Creek is still a lot relative to Evergy's portfolio or KEPCO's portfolio.
KEPCO. Who is KEPCO?
KEPCO is it's kind of a collaboration or conglomerate of a lot of local electric cooperatives, right? So they provide rural electricity to the eastern half of Kansas. So a lot of the
Lion Coffee Rural Co-op.
Yeah, yeah, like Flint Hills Co-op and then Lion Coffee, or which is now Four Rivers.
Right.
So all of those cooperatives are combined into KEPCO.
And does their power go through the power grid as well?
It all goes the same places, right? Or it's all interconnected.
Is there any politics involved in any of this, or is it all pretty set in stone?
Yes. I'll just leave it at that.
Okay.
Answer the question directly.
Not a question for a plant manager.
Yeah.
We get his boss in here sometime.
Yeah, we just make the electricity reliably, Steve.
Okay.
Okay, let's talk about Wolf Creek's contribution to the overall grid.
Right. So diverse portfolio, and if you think back, so we've got coal, we've got natural gas, we've got wind, solar, and we've got nuclear, baseload nuclear.
This is we as Evergy.
We as Evergy, yes. And so just to think about the strength of diversity in your generation portfolio, if you can remember February of 21 when it got extremely cold here, and, you know, I think we saw sustained negative temperatures for about a 10-day period. Coal was frozen because it rained prior to, right? We were doing everything we could to bust it up and burn it in our coal plants. The wind wasn't blowing, the sun wasn't shining, and gas was curtailed to the residential customers because that's where the priority was, right? We ran very reliably. There are other days, or like earlier this week, we had enough wind generation in the Southwest Power Pool that exceeded the demand. So there are times where we don't operate at 100% capacity because we're not needed. And that's a little bit different philosophy than we grew up in the nuclear
industry.
Pump
out as much power as you can each day, no matter what the demand is.
So we call it being flexible or being adaptable, right? Based on market conditions and demand, we will, you know, our natural gas plants are peaking units, so we can cycle those fairly quickly. We will also ramp the coal plants as needed based on demand, and now we're doing that with our nuclear plant as well. So we've been doing that. This is the third operating cycle we've been doing that.
About how much of Evergy's portfolio is nuclear? You're the only plant, correct?
We are the only plant, and depending on if you're talking about generation or capacity, but we make up half of all the emission-free generation.
25% of
the total generation.
So safe to say that wind and solar combined make up about 25% as well now?
Yes. I think that's fairly accurate.
And the balance, coal, natural gas?
Would be coal. And we have a lot more capacity than generation, right? So
right.
You're required to have more capacity than you have to generate, right? Just for worst-case scenarios. So we would ensure that we can make enough electricity for worst-case scenarios.
Last time you were here, I remember you saying that nuclear is the only source of energy that isn't subsidized. Is that still true?
It is not. So the inflation recovery, that's a good memory, Steve. I hope you don't remember everything I said, by the way. The Inflation Recovery Act is changing that some, and so that'll allow us to get some subsidies on days that we would have been negative. So it could also impact that the how much we move the plant or reduce power based on that subsidy. We have not started getting that yet, and it's new, so I'm not sure we fully understand exactly what it'll mean, but it is, in my mind, a step in the right direction for nuclear.
Well, and the only reason that the question that the answer was what it was is because you're going to start being subsidized in situations where you need to be.
Right.
But coal, natural gas, wind, they're all still subsidized. Viable.
I don't know about coal and natural gas, how well they are, but wind and solar are, and I don't know all the details around that either.
I think natural gas gets a depletion allowance, I'm pretty sure, but okay. That just makes sense.
Yeah, I think coal and natural gas were included in the Inflation Reduction Act as well, probably similarly to nuclear.
Way above my pay grade.
The key is to try to make it affordable.
It is.
For customers.
You know, for us, it's reliability, affordability, and sustainability, right? You have to invest enough to make sure the plant's going to run for a long time, but being reliable and available to dispatch our generation when needed is our priority. And obviously affordability is right behind that for our customers.
So in McKinsey's work, Wolf Creek by the numbers, 17.3% of Kansas generated electricity. Who else generates electricity in the state besides Evergy and KEPCO?
Yeah, that's
just Wolf Creek.
17.3% is just Wolf Creek.
So the plant output, the 1,250 megawatts electric that we produce or can generate, is about 17% of
the state's
electricity.
Safe to say, ballpark number, Evergy's 80% of the state?
Well, Evergy's service territory is a little west of Wichita, east to the Kansas City metro area, north up to St. Joe, Missouri. But you also have Sunflower Electric in that western half of the state that generates the rest. But I would say Evergy's probably 60 to 70%. Evergy and KEPCO, 60 to 70% of the state's electricity.
Well, and you said earlier 90 counties. McKinsey had 89. We won't argue about that. That's out of 105 counties, for those of you that don't know that trivia question.
I was going to ask because I didn't know that. But I would go with McKinsey on that, too. I was rounding.
And you can see that map there at the bottom of the page there, Steve, is the makeup of KEPCO. All there.
Can you read those numbers?
No, not the numbers. They're just towns names. But they're Four Rivers and Butler Co-op. Those are all the co-ops that KEPCO's made up of, which cover about half the state themselves.
So what's a normal work day for you? What do you concentrate on?
So a good day for me, my folks love this about me, I wake up usually somewhere between 2 and 4 a.m. and start thinking about or talking to the control room. For me, making sure that we're giving our people everything that they need to operate and maintain the plant safely. But our game is risk identification, risk management, and safe, reliable operations, right? So I grew up in operations. I understand the technology, but my passion is the people that we get to work with. You know, nuclear professionals, one, it starts with how we hire, right? We have a very, I think, rigorous hiring process where we test people before we hire them, and we screen people, I think, pretty highly. And then we train them for a long time. And we give them the knowledge, skills, and abilities to go do what we want them to do, and they do it well. And so, you know, I love, you know, I said I never thought I'd be in nuclear power. Some days I laugh. I'm not sure how I got so lucky to have this job, you know, to go and work with people that are highly motivated, highly skilled, and just really good at what they do. And we critique ourselves at such a low level constantly. We spend a lot of time talking about the things that didn't go well, right? We learn a lot from ourselves. We learn a lot from other plants in the industry to prevent the events from happening that I talked about earlier. And so when you do that, sometimes you can focus too much on the negative and overlook all the great things that our people do every day. Because, I mean, 99.9% of everything we do flawlessly.
That probably is McKinsey's part of her job, isn't it, to point out the good stuff?
Yeah, and she's done a really good job since she's come in with external perspective. And, you know, frankly, that was one of the things we desired, was somebody from the outside that didn't know how we had always communicated things. So she does do a good job of pointing out things and helping us celebrate, right? She's been able to coordinate different activities and events for us to celebrate the things that our people do well.
You talked about hiring, and you have a rigorous program for doing that. The last time you were here, according to my numbers here, you have 750 employees, but that's down from what was the peak number? And how does that work? How do you square that?
So we were over 1,000 when I got here in 2016. And like you said, we're roughly 750. It's really 740 right now. And we will work that down close to 700 over the next year or so. And we do that, one, through a lot of efficiencies. When we centralized a lot of our back office, you know, divisions like human resources, supply chain, accounting and finance, information technology, as we became part of Evergy, those resources went into, you know, it didn't make sense to have three human resources departments, one in Burlington, one in Topeka, and one in Kansas City. So now we have one as a utility. And so we were able to reduce numbers through the efficiencies and centralization. Also technology. Right, a lot of things that we can use technology for, remote monitoring, equipment monitoring, using drones and things like that, have in place of building towers of scaffold and putting people up on them and then tearing the, you know, towers of scaffold down. You can send a drone up there and get better quality footage. So using technology, one, is an enabler to get us, you know, to smaller numbers, but it also improves safety margins for our people, right? So you think about our containment structure and doing a civil inspection of the concrete of the containment building, which is, you know, 300 feet tall, and we would build scaffold up there, and we're required to do it.
And to get up there and look at it.
And go look at it, and then you have an engineer that's scribbling notes on a piece of paper and taking pictures, and then they get back to their desk and they may or may not remember what it looked like. So then they go back up there, right? And the quality of footage on these cameras, on the drones, and it's only getting better, right? When we get them and a year later, they have better ones. So we can invest in that. It's another example of how Evergy has helped us, because we have a drone program within the company. And so that inspection that was a five-day inspection and took a lot of effort to get the scaffold and everything built and tore down. So you're probably looking at, you know, 3 or 4 weeks worth of work. We did in a day and a half this last time with a drone. And the lady that did it, the engineer that did it, said it's the best quality of footage that we've ever had.
So how many people does it take to run the drone program?
Just one. And it's not a full-time job, right? But they're in high demand. So we have pilots. We've got, I think, 5 or 6 people that we have qualified at the plant to operate them, to fly them.
That's interesting. There's BJ Byers, our guest. We need to get our second break in and come back. We'll wrap things up. You be thinking about what we haven't asked as we go to break here. This is the on-air chat. You're listening to KVOE. We are live and we are local.
Income is the outcome that matters most in retirement. I'm Craig Barnwell with CB Financial, and I've been in retirement and wealth planning for over 25 years. If I doubled your portfolio, that might not change your lifestyle. You'd still be you. However, if I doubled your income, that could make a significant impact on your retirement. So whether you're retired or you want to see how soon that can happen, give us a call to set up a free, no-obligation visit. You can reach us at 620-208-6777. That's 620-208-6777. Retire happy. Retire with CB Financial.
When your next project requires crushed limestone, contact Eagle Creek Quarry. Located 3 miles south of Hartford, the quarry has a variety of limestone aggregates to fit all of your personal property, construction, or ag needs. Their large loading area allows trucks to get loaded and be back on the road quickly. Call Eagle Creek Quarry at 620-392-5659. That's Eagle Creek Quarry, 620-392-5659.
Get out your cowboy duds and be a part of the EFOS Roundup Auction, Friday, March 3rd at the Anderson Building on the Lyon County Fairgrounds.
All proceeds benefit the David Traylor Zoo. For tickets and more information, log on to emporiazoo.org. KVOE 96.9 FM and 1400 AM.
Oh, come on now. You come up here for the cowboy experience.
Live and local.
KVOE live and local, and time now for a look at sports headlines. The 24-hour KVOE newsroom and a look at all the sports you need. Here is Greg Gray.
Thank you, Sean, and good morning. Emporia High girls basketball team cruised to a sub-state semifinal win over Newton, 56-37 last night. Emporia High jumped out to a 19-0 lead and never did look back at it. Kerman, Rebecca Schneider led the way with 19 points. Emporia High will host May South on Friday with a trip to state on the line. Emporia High boys basketball team plays host to Bishop Carroll tonight in the sub-state semifinals. Tip-off for that game is set for 7 o'clock. You can hear the game on KVOE, 1400 AM, 96.9 FM. Last night in girls 2A play, Chase County defeated Harrington 47-24. Hillsboro over Northern Heights 56-15. Linden defeated Caraparavel 53-22. Mission Valley over Oskaloosa 76-28. 3A boys play, Osage City over Prairie View 56-26. And it was Burlington over Santa Fe Trail in overtime 59-56. And Fredonia defeated Council Grove. Emporia State women open up MIAA tournament play tonight. They'll face Central Oklahoma. Tip-off is set for 8:15. You can hear the game on Mix 104.9. Other games today at the MIAA tournament, Northwest Missouri State plays Newman on the women's side. On the men's side, Washburn plays Missouri Western. Missouri Southern plays Northeastern State. Emporia State men play Lincoln on Friday. Five Emporia State basketball players named to the All-MIAA squad. Treasure Job, first-team selection on the women's side. Owen Long, a first-team selection on the men's side. Elijah Comet there, third-team selection. Caden Evans, an honorable mention. Peyton Roger Schmidt, named to the all-defensive team. Kansas Jayhawks clinched a share of the Big 12 regular season title last night with a 67-63 win over Texas Tech. They can clinch the regular season title with a win at Texas on Saturday. Tonight, Kansas State hosts Oklahoma. You can hear that game on Country 101.7 FM, tip-off at 7. Oklahoma Baptist defeated the Emporia State baseball team 16-13 yesterday. They'll resume MIAA play this weekend, hosting Fort Hays State with all games to be played at the Trusher Sports Complex beginning on Friday, weather permitting. That's a look at sports. I'm Greg Gray, KVOE, live and local.
Thank you, Greg. KVOE, 1400 AM, 96.9 FM. And we now return you to the on-air chat.
All right, welcome back to the on-air chat. BJ Beyer, plant manager. That isn't right, is it? Yeah, not general manager, plant manager.
Plant manager is correct.
Here we go, Wolf Creek. And we're down to just a few minutes, BJ. What about external concerns or external pressures, or who do you have to deal with that isn't, it's maybe not your boss or something like that?
Yeah, I would just role of external organization. So we talked about the Nuclear Regulatory Commission earlier. We have, they regulate us, make sure that everything we do is in accordance with our design basis and our technical specifications, which is really stems from the Code of Federal Regulations. So basically they help make sure we comply with the law. We have a resident inspector, two of them on site with us all the time. And anyone that's with the commission has unfettered access, is what we call it. So they can go anywhere they want on our facility anytime. And we welcome that. Another one is the Institute of Nuclear Power Operations, or World Association of Nuclear Operators, Atlanta Center. And so they are an organization that was created and supported by the industry after Three Mile Island, and they evaluate us and assess us constantly. It's called continuous monitoring. So we have touch interfaces with them monthly at a minimum, and then they come on site. You know, they were just on site recently to do a corporate evaluation, which that was partially at the plant and partially in Kansas City, and then they'll be back in September. They'll be here in July and September. So we're always getting help from someone to get better. The STARS Alliance is something people may not know about. So we're a single site utility, as you all asked about earlier, right? So we only have one nuclear plant. A lot of utilities have several. You know, if you think a Constellation has 20 plus reactors, we have one, right? So the centralized resources that other fleets have, we may not have. So we created, or we're part of an alliance, which is in Phoenix, and there's four pressurized water reactors that are only single-site utilities west of the Mississippi, and we're all in that alliance. So we rotate people from our organization out there for a 2 to 3 year rotation, and it's a centralized group that monitors performance as well, but also sends resources to help each site when we need them, depending on which one. I chair the plant manager subcommittee, and we report out to the board of directors of the STARS Alliance. You know, I get to do that twice a year.
What's that old carpenter's adage about measure twice or something before you cut? You guys have safety on top of safety, and you got a great record, right?
We do. So a couple things, you know, professionals work till they get things right. I like to say nuclear professionals work until they can't get it wrong, right? So a lot of prep goes into that. And from an industrial safety perspective, and I'll knock on wood because I get paranoid every time I talk about this, but our last OSHA recordable injury at the plant was in December of 2019. So over 5 million safe person hours worked since we hurt someone to the level of an OSHA recordable. So, you know, that doesn't happen by accident. It happens because our people identify hazards and eliminate them when they can, or mitigate them to prevent from hurting each other. And genuinely, I think our people really care about each other.
You got a great operation. It's thanks for coming in and being so candid with us. You've given us a lot of, you know, if anybody had reservations, I think they got to feel better with you in charge. So let me ask you a quick off the grid question.
Okay.
Big announcement a week or two ago. The governor was in Coffee County in an effort to build a $1.9 billion chips plant to make computer chips, that kind of thing. What effect could that have on Wolf Creek?
So, you know, it's a great opportunity for Coffee County, and we did allow that group in the early stages. They met in our education center just because they needed a large forum, and so we kind of sat on the sidelines and listened in to some of that. But potential impact for us, you know, demand, it could help the demand for, you know, for our energy. But as far as a threat, it's another good employer in the area that could compete for some of our resources. So we're going to do what we can to protect our most valuable resource, which is our people.
So. Of your 700-plus employees, how many of them live in Coffee County? Do you know that?
Oh, I don't know that. But, you know, we've got folks that commute from Kansas City. There's a lot of folks in Lawrence, Topeka, Emporia, and as far south as, you know, probably 20 or 30 miles south of Yates Center. So draw that circle, or whatever that would be, and everywhere in between. You know, it's not unusual for our folks to drive an hour to get to work. Most are required to live within 75 miles of the plant for our emergency response organization. But
BJ, you're a busy guy. We appreciate you coming in.
All right. Hey, thanks for the opportunity. I enjoy it.
Okay. This has been the on-air chat. Brought to you by Bruce Davis Construction. For commercial dirt work, demolition, dirt hauling, and more, call Bruce Davis Construction, 342-5001. And if you want to retire happy, retire with CB Financial. See Craig Barnwell. He's at 517 West 6th Avenue right here in Emporia. This has been the on-air chat. You're listening to KVOE. We are live and we are local.
KVOE, live and local, 1400 AM and 96.9.